Good morning, everybody. Could board staff let me know if all of the board members are present? I do see Mr. Tapscott. And Mr. Roost has just joined.
They are not here yet to start a meeting.
Thank you. We'll wait just another moment for the other board members. I believe we're just waiting for Ms. Moon.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
I just received a text from board member, from Vice Mayor, Vice Chair Moon, and I believe she's on the wrong link. So if you give me a moment, I'll attempt to contact her.
Thank you. There we go.
Madam Chair, you have a quorum now.
Thank you very much, Mr. Overton. Good morning. My name is Angela Ryder, Chair of the Arizona State Board of Massage Therapy. It is Monday, April 25th, 2022, 9:06 a.m., and I'm calling this meeting to order. The Chair of the Arizona State Board of Massage Therapy reserves the right to change the order of items published on this agenda, except for public hearings set for a specific time. During the board meeting and upon a vote of the majority of a quorum, the board may go into executive session to obtain legal advice from the board's attorneys pursuant to ARS 38431.03A3 on any items listed on the agenda. All meeting attendees whose presence are not required in the executive session may remain in the board meeting room when the board withdraws to chambers for an executive session. Any and all legal action by board members will only take place in open session. In accordance to the open meeting law, the board has a civility policy that prohibits any type of disorderly conduct that disrupts the board from carrying out its business. Individuals found violating this policy will be asked to modify their behavior and act civilly, and if the disorderly conduct continues, the persons may be removed from the meeting. Mr. Overton, will you please call roll? Unmute, please.
Sorry about that. Sorry, Chair Ryder.
Present.
Vice Chair Moon.
Present.
Board Member DeRoost.
Present.
Board Member Tapscott.
Present.
All present, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Our next item is a call to public pursuant to ARS 38-431.01H. The board may make an open call to the public during a public meeting subject to a reasonable time, which is 3 minutes, place and manner restrictions to allow individuals to address the public body on any issues within the jurisdiction of the public, of the public body. However, members of the board are not allowed to discuss or take legal action on matters raised during an open call meeting unless the matters are appropriately noticed for discussion and legal action. The board, however, may ask staff to review a matter or may ask the matter to be put on a future agenda. Be advised, a call to public is not an opportunity for testimony for cases that are being reviewed by the board. Do we have a call to public? And it looks as though we do not. The board members should have had an opportunity to review the board packet for today. Are there any conflicts of interest from the board members? We do not have any conflicts of interest. Have all of the board members had an opportunity to review the massage board open minutes from March 28, 2022? And are there any discussions to be had regarding these open minutes? I move to accept the massage board open minutes from March 28, 2022. Do we have a second?
This board member DeRoost, I'll second that.
Thank you. And could we do a roll call vote, Mr. Overton?
Yes, Madam Chair. Board Member Tapscott?
Aye.
Board Member DeRoost?
Aye.
Vice Chair Moon?
Aye.
Madam Chair?
Aye.
4 ayes, passes.
The motion passes. Next on our agenda, we have a very special guest with us today, Ms. Sandy Fritz. Please let me introduce Sandy. Ms. Fritz is a Lapeer, Minnesota-based massage therapist with more than 40 years of experience in multiple settings. She's a school owner and educator and massage therapy textbook author and a well-known industry leader. She is the owner of Health Enrichment Center, a massage therapy franchise, and is a writer for Massage Magazine. if anyone has read any of the Mosby's Fundamentals of Therapeutic Massage Therapy textbooks, then you are familiar with Miss Sandy Fritz. Thank you so much for joining us today, Sandy. I understand that you were a little bit early, so better early than late, and better late than never. So thank you again for joining us today. The virtual floor is yours.
Well, thanks for asking me. And yes, I double checked the time, and I'm here in Michigan. It's I wasn't sure if it was 11 or 12, so I just hung out. So that was kind of fun. And I appreciate you asking me to join. I like to interface with as many massage therapists as I can. I was asked to specifically speak for just a few minutes about two topics. One is some conundrums and confusion we have in the massage therapy community about employment and private practice and independent contractors, and difficulties with the terminology and understanding what each one means, and the problem being that they are sometimes used incorrectly but interchangeably. And this does create issues, especially when people are, students are in school and they're trying to understand what their career landscape looks like. Taking off from that same idea of terminology issues, I have been involved for the last 2 years with an international consortium that is looking to find agreement amongst multiple manual therapy occupations, including massage therapy, physical therapy, osteopathic practice, European approaches, as well as osteopathic physicians here in the States. And the issue is that we all sort of do the same sorts of approaches, but each discipline has called it something else. And so it makes it very difficult for researchers, as well as lawmakers and boards such as yours, to accurately interpret what is being said, as well as conducting ongoing research. It's been quite a journey to be involved with that. And as it gains traction and it takes hold on an international level, I think it will make everybody's life a lot easier. For example, defining scope of practice and a definition of massage. These things, terminology issues, move slowly. Certainly, I know that as a textbook author for over 25 years, and the words we use do make a difference. Now, I am not as familiar with this platform as I am with some others. I do have a short PowerPoint, and I have it up, and I am not exactly sure how to share it. Angela, you want to help me out on that a little bit? What button do I prove?
I will actually defer to Mr. Tony Wilcox if he's available. There should be some options somewhere on the bottom to present.
There's an arrow that's pointing up. You click on that, and then it'll ask you what screen you want to share.
Okay, an arrow is pointing up. Ah, over here maybe. Activities, does it say?
No, it says present now. It's next to the hand.
Next to the hand. Oh, there it is. Got it. Present your entire screen. Now let's see what's going to show up. What do you see?
You need still to click on another window, because a window will come up and say, which one do you want to pick?
Okay. All right.
On those choices.
So here I am again. Which window do I want to share?
Why don't you pick the PowerPoint one or whatever
program. Yeah, that's the one I have got. I clicked, and we're going to see. Nope, that didn't work. So, it is not an earth-shattering PowerPoint, and I would rather just, if it's all right with everybody, instead of me searching through this, how about if I just go through the information very quickly?
Absolutely. Yes, it'll primarily be to keep you on track. So.
Yeah, it's PowerPoints are usually for the person trying to use them. So the first PowerPoint I have, the first two, were related to this idea of employment categories or massage therapy practice categories. And massage therapy is unique in that we can be involved as a licensed profession. We can be involved in autonomous practice, which means that people can go into massage as self-employed. Many other health professions, their employment or career opportunities occur within a broader scope within a medical setting or underneath a supervision with another professional. But massage therapists, we can open our own individual practices. Since the early 2000s, there has also been an increase in the ability for people to gain employment. Now, I've been a massage therapist for over 43 years. That's really a long time. And I have seen many, many, many shifts occur. And for many, many years, there was not opportunities for massage therapists to move into employment. That has changed. The various franchise brands were a major player in this ability for people to graduate from massage therapy school, pass whatever licensing structure is available, and then move towards getting a job. Which has a lot of advantages. There remains confusion, primarily from people with the same level of gray hair that I have, that it's a different world for them. And, you know, we didn't have a choice other than to go into private practice or sole practitioner. And so the terms that get confused are employee, independent contractor, and sole practitioner are the big three that get confused. And back in the day, massage therapists would basically be employed by a variety of spas, chiropractors, other fitness centers, wellness centers, whatever, but they were not called employees nor treated as employees. They were classified as independent contractors. However, they were treated as employees. And recently, that has come to light, and the pandemic shed even more on that, about the idea of misclassified employees. So the bottom line is, and sometimes it's nice just to get to that, is that it is extremely rare that a massage therapist could be realistically, accurately, and according to tax law, be classified as an independent contractor. An independent contractor, by definition, is somebody who is a sole practitioner. They are self-employed. So there are issues that we look at to determine if somebody is truly classified correctly when they are doing anything other than working out of their own office setting. And it really amounts to level of control. How much control does an individual have, then that will determine whether or not they are appropriately classified. And this does have ramifications in terms of legal practice, the ability for taxes to be allocated appropriately. And one of the main reasons why an employer would misclassify is that they're trying to find a way around all of the employee taxes and other issues that come into play. There are also some that are misinformed. I have talked with a lot of people who have said, well, my attorney made up an employment contract, or I was told that I was my own self-employed and I can wear whatever I want to work and I can make my own schedule. Those are not criteria that determine whether or not somebody is an employee or self-employed. So if somebody is working within an established environment, there is somebody who is regulating how that business operates, and a massage therapist is involved in that practice, almost always they should be classified as an employee. One of the things that has occurred is people have moved away from the independent contractor language. Here we are with terminology again. And they have chosen to go to a landlord lease type agreement where they will then say, well, I'll just rent you space. And they're still, though, treating them as an employee because they are dictating or have control over the massage therapist. So in a landlord situation, all the facility owner can do is control the facility. And if they, even if they do something like collect the money, then that puts into jeopardy the idea that this is a landlord situation. The renter, the massage therapist, should be collecting all of their money, and then they should pay a daily or weekly or monthly fee. So I'm open to questions on that. If there's any, it remains confusing. And both the massage therapist and the potential employer or facility, chiropractors have done a lot of shifting to the room rental situation. And then that has involved insurance fraud because, at least in the areas that I understand, that if in order for medical billing to occur by a designated individual, the massage therapist needs to be an employee. And that is so that the billing profession, a doctor, a chiropractor, a physical therapist, has a level of control and liability when they have an employee and controls the session. Therefore, it fits more under how insurance billing, health insurance billing operates. So it's a conundrum and it's a mess.
Sandy, I do have a question about that too, or just even a comment if you want to piggyback on it. Something that also that is very common with these supposed independent contractors or 1099 workers,
right,
is that instead of a daily, weekly, or monthly rent, that the owners of the facility are charging a percentage of what is being brought in for each client. So, for instance, the owner is dictating how much is charged for the session.
Yeah.
And then they are saying, okay, your rent is, you know, 60% of that. And then they're issuing the 1099s at the end of the year for the amount that, so it still ends up being a misclassified employment situation.
Yeah. And a lot of times what you do is you follow the money.
Mm-hmm.
Which direction is the money going? If at any point the person is negotiating money or exchanging money with the supposed employer towards the massage therapist, that's a big red flag on what's going on.
Right.
So, yes, I see a hand up.
Hi, this is Vice Chair Moon. Thank you so much for the presentation. I had a couple of questions regarding... So I know you're saying that it's rare for there to be an independent contract.
Really, really, really rare.
Is that, are you suggesting that that's preferred? And
no.
Then secondly, I'm curious as far as the difference or maybe not so much of a difference between medical providers, by example, clinical counselors or therapists that are housed under one office, and there's some people that are employees of the office, and so they get the front desk reception, they get the liability insurance, and then there are some independent contractors that are independent within their own liability insurance, and they're collecting payments. So I'm curious as far as, are we seeing this across sectors, or are you saying specifically within the massage therapy lens?
No, this is cross-discipline and much, much larger than the massage therapy community. It's just brought more light to these practices within the massage therapy community. Certainly there are nuances, and I'm not an attorney, and I'm certainly not an expert on the individual regulations within your state. However, as an educator, the way that the regulations are defined for a massage therapist to function as an independent contractor, especially in a business that has massage therapy as one of its offerings, even if they work occasionally, they would need to be in as a employee. It can be per diem, it can be those types of things. And I don't want to accuse various businesses of saying, oh, well, you're just trying to get underneath the law. This is a confusing issue. Uber is an example of how this has been navigated and still remains confusing. I think the biggest and most important area of this is for massage therapists to realize that they may and are likely misclassified, and they probably should be employees. It would be rare that they're not. So that would be really the exception to the rule, that they are truly an independent contractor. And you can be an employee. They say, well, I work multiple locations. You can be an employee in multiple locations as well. You know, so some of the things that people will put out there and say, oh, no, I operate independently. The other risk is for the employer. Sometimes massage therapists will, they think they're making more money as an independent contractor, or they think that there's a different level of status, or there's something that goes on that makes them think that they want to remain classified as independent contractor. They can, because they're technically self-employed, they can deduct, you know, and reduce their tax burden, et cetera. When they are hesitant, you know, many of the spas, et cetera, have attempted to convert the inappropriate independent contractor status to employees, and the massage therapists have not been cooperative. And when that occurs, that puts the employer, if they try to accommodate the massage therapist, that puts the employer at tremendous risk. Because if they are determined to have misclassified, they have to make up all of those taxes. There are penalties to pay. All the employment taxes have to be recovered. It will very often put that employer out of business. So I certainly don't have any answers to this, but I do think awareness is important and language is important. Now, the International Consortium on Manual Therapies, which is going to be happening in just a couple of weeks, is an interdisciplinary and global initiative to try to standardize manual therapy type language. And by definition, massage is a type of manual therapy, and massage therapists are specializing in massage as the manual therapy approach. And so that will help in some ways, but and hopefully over time, there will be more influence and help through our professional organizations as well, because we just call the same thing too many things, too many different names for the same thing, and it just results in nothing but confusion. And sometimes people will do that to get through loopholes in a licensing law. In Michigan, certain disciplines are not regulated by our massage license because they call themselves body work or something that is not clearly defined in our scope of practice and our legislative initiatives. So I know how tedious this can be in terms of trying to figure out as we speak about these things. And I think that's why Angela asked me to chat as an educator, is that there is tremendous confusion. Sometimes it is deliberate. People are using that confusion in order to avoid tax law or employee liability or whatever on that. Sometimes it's just misinformation. And this whole independent contractor, a 1099 employee does not exist. That language is always wrong. You cannot be a 1099 employee. You can be contracted or you can be hired as an independent contractor if you fit the definition. And then that business would issue a 1099. But that would be, some of your trades fit into that. So I own a building and I contract for, I'm in Michigan, right? I contract for the snow to be plowed. It is a business to business relationship. And I also contract if I need somebody to come in and do some electrical work. I contract as a business to a business. But as I have a massage therapy school, as well as we have a massage therapy franchise business, if I have an esthetician come in and fill in, they're an employee. The only way I can get around that is if, and be really with it, is if they have registered with an employment agency, a temp agency, for example, then I can get a hold of the temp agency, ask if there are any massage therapists that could come in and cover a shift, or an esthetician could come and cover a shift. But those individuals then are employees of the temp agency. And now I am contracting with the other business. So it is, I see confusion. It is confusing. A 1099, all 1099 is that an employee, a business is saying, I spent this money with this business, this contracting business. And it's so people will say I'm a 1099 employee. They may not know that they are saying that wrong, but there is no such thing as a 1099 employee. There is an employee gets a W-2. So splitting hairs just a little bit, but then when it comes to tax law, then it is confusing and it can be problematic. And whether that would come under the jurisdiction of the board or not, I don't know. I mean, it's more of a financial situation. But certainly, I think Angela was wise to bring this to your attention, that you might need to be more clear about how people are defined. And when somebody is an employee, then they, if there is misconduct or something that the board would be involved with, that extends to the employer as well. So
I think it is just a really, I mean, you know, I don't know how it is in Michigan. I know you and I, Sandy, are on social media a lot, and we see in many of the groups, you know, all of these misclassification posts. But more as an education for massage therapists in the industry, because I think a lot of people just don't know, or maybe in desperate situations where they need to make some money, they take these jobs that are truly a misclassification. But I do want to kind of go back to the international consortium, because I think that across the different disciplines, getting a true definition of the language that each discipline is using could be very beneficial for regulatory boards.
Yes.
Potentially even updating the rules and statutes at some point and getting a better definition as to who should be providing massage therapy and who is not to be providing massage therapy. And massage therapy is such a, it has such a broad definition anyways, that people will take pieces of that definition and make up a new term.
Yes. You've really nailed it right there. Massage is it is actually clearly defined. It is a soft tissue mechanical force application. It doesn't matter what you call it. And so a lot of times statutes will use Swedish classical massage terms, which are like effleurage and petrissage. And that is only a very small, those terms only define a very, very small segment of massage therapy. So the entry level analysis project that was done by the massage therapy community broadened those terms and that describe the actual application of the mechanical force, which is a push or pull. That is it. That is all any manual therapist can do. Now there are, you can call it a lot of different things and you can combine it a lot of different ways, but ultimately that is it. There's some sort of push or pull that influences the soma, the body somehow. And then you can call that a lot of different things. So gliding, for example, is a much better term to use than effleurage. And those were defined in the entry-level analysis project. And then each individual discipline, each individual modality will sometimes put their own language on it, which is really a nightmare in massage therapy. That there can be up to 300 different subclassifications under push and pull. So how do you keep loopholes closed? So that's the problem we have in Michigan, is we have some really significant loopholes in our legislation that allow for sex trafficking and difficulty in determining, you know, who should get a license and who shouldn't. Real serious definitions that if we could close those loopholes, it would make a big difference. And one of the determinants is a person clothed or not? And that should make no difference at all whether they're clothed or not. Because a mechanical force introduction is going to influence tissue pretty much the same way. And so it doesn't matter really what you call it, and it doesn't matter if a person's on a mat on the floor, or a person is on a table, or if they have clothing, or if they're draped, or whatever. Anything that falls under the broader definition of massage should be covered then through the licensing. And they should be licensed, including things like reflexology, which is one of the areas that's excluded from our license here in Michigan.
And same here in Arizona as well.
And it opens the door for illicit activity here. But by definition, you have to touch to apply a mechanical force. So touch and being licensed to touch then is a big issue for our various boards across the United States that are trying to really elevate and support massage therapy as an occupation. And I think that not having quality definitions and getting around it by calling it different things is interfering with that and probably creates a lot of confusion when you're trying to decide something as well with that language.
Sure. Do you think with the basic definition of massage therapy that it's based on a particular board's interpretation of what that definition is?
Oh, I do. And I think it depends on the members and what their exposure has been. The language has changed. The understanding of what massage does, which then reinforces the language, has changed tremendously in the last 5 years. So if somebody is trying to interpret something and they haven't, for whatever reason, I mean, if I didn't write textbooks, I would probably get behind the times too. It takes a lot of time to stay up to date. They might look at something and say, well, that's not massage, because they don't understand that it is. Even though it might be historically called something else, like I mentioned some Swedish/classical massage terminology. And so somebody might say, well, effleurage, it's effleurage in our definition within our scope of practice. So I'm not doing effleurage. I am doing compression and movement over clothing on a mat. So I'm not doing massage. That's not true. That is not true. Not according to the definition of what massage is in the broader realm of manual therapy.
I appreciate your interpretation of that. Do any of the other board members have any other questions for Ms. Sandy Fritz today?
Well, I really appreciated being with you all, and I can see some really interesting looks on some faces here about, that's something to think about. And so change happens. We need to be able to adapt to change. Being in the profession as long as I have, believe me, I have seen a lot of change. I've had to do a lot of adaptation on my own part, including my language and what I say. I only see there being more coalescing and hopefully in the future, more clarity, because it is so often the terminology that trips us up.
Absolutely. So, Mr. Tapscott, you have your hand up.
Yeah, Ms. Fritz, thank you so much, by the way. I have read your textbook and used it for many years. So I'm very familiar with it. Do you have any thoughts on, I get a lot of people that come to me and say, like my students, when they're waiting for a massage license, they come to me and say, a chiropractor has told me I can work for them and I can do massage underneath their license.
Yeah, I have heard that too.
I didn't get the Arizona law, but I've always been like, that does not sound like how licensing works to me. You can't work underneath their license and practice massage. But I just want to know if you have any comments about that, because it comes up a lot.
Yeah, I've seen that in Michigan, and I have a lot of people get a hold of me and ask me questions. Probably there's a loophole there that allows them to do a little bit of something under the supervision of the chiropractor as a covered assistant or whatever. Ethically, that is absolutely not the way we would want to pursue things. And a challenge, I believe, by definition, would be that a licensed practitioner needs to be licensed in order for them to practice, even under the supervision of another licensed occupation.
good. That's the way I interpret it too. I just yeah. want to hear another professional's opinion.
Yeah, but I'll bet you that somebody would try to slide that somehow, yeah. you know, and probably they're going to call it something else other than massage therapy. They're going to find a name that lets them slide between the cracks there.
Yeah. My thought process was like, I couldn't go perform chiropractic adjustments just because a chiropractor is watching me. So why would I be able to perform massage if I'm unlicensed? I couldn't quite figure out the logic.
Yeah. I don't know that there is any other than we have had, you know, and even chiropractic assistants, that is not a regulated occupation. We do have that in physical therapy now. There are physical therapy aides. But there are assistants, but then there are also physical therapy aides, which don't have a license to them. Right. And so there's another little gray area within the physical therapy world where somebody might be doing massage without a massage license. See, a lot of occupations can do massage.
Yes, agreed.
All right. Massage therapists, we're the specialists in massage therapy. So, but massage is an approach or a method. So that can also be where things can get a little dicey.
Thank you.
Good question.
Yes, we do see a lot of that in the industry as well. And I think that, I believe in the state of Arizona, as a chiropractor, many chiropractors will hire massage therapists under their supervision, also and request them to become chiropractic assistants, and under their supervision offer some type of manual therapy. I'm glad that you brought that up, Mr. Tapscott. I think that we'll add that to a discussion for a later date.
Yeah. Manual therapy can be things other than massage therapy, but massage therapy is always manual therapy. So keep that in mind when you're thinking about how you interpret these things. So
thank you so much, Sandy.
Well, I enjoyed our little chat, and I probably can leave the meeting.
If you want to stick around, you're welcome to hang out with us. But if you have other things to be doing in Michigan, please go right ahead. We so greatly appreciate you being here with us today and enlightening the massage therapists and publics that are on the call. And we hope you have a wonderful day.
Well, thank you. Now I got to figure out what button to push to go away.
Thank you so much, Sandy.
Bye-bye.
I would like to request a 5-minute comfort break before we move on to more serious business. Not that our previous business was not serious. It was very serious. Let's do a 5-minute comfort break, and then we will resume with our board duties. It is 9:54, and we are back in session. Ms. Moon.
Hi, Chair Ryder. My apologies. I informed the executive director that I do need to log off in the next few minutes. My apologies, though, for needing to leave the meeting early.
Thank you for that notification. Okay. Upon a vote of the majority of the quorum, the board may go into executive session pursuant to ARS 38-431.03A2 to discuss or consider records exempt by law from public inspection, including the receipt and discussion of information or testimony that is specifically required to be maintained as confidential by state or federal law, and or ARS 38431.03A3 to obtain legal advice from the board's attorney, as previously mentioned. Members of the public community, please be advised that when the board is reviewing cases, some of the information being discussed is done so in great detail and can be graphic in nature. attending these meetings is done so at your own discretion. Board members, also be aware that the Auditor General's office will also be accompanying us during executive sessions should we go into executive session. Our first investigative review is going to be for Wen Ding, massage therapy license 17871, which was revoked on 9/29/2016. And this is for an application for massage license reinstatement. The purpose of this investigative review is to gather relevant information related to the previous violations. Would the board staff please summarize the file of case number 22-124, Ms. Wen Ding, with a surrender revoked license number 17871?
Yes, Madam Chair. On October 19th, 2021, applicant applied for her massage therapy license. On her application, she answered yes to the question, have you voluntarily surrendered a license? During the course of the investigation, it was discovered that on April 8, 2015, she was arrested and charged with prostitution, massaging a client with exposed genitals, therapist exposing her breasts, and failure to maintain required logs. Then on September 29, 2016, before the Board of Massage Therapy in case number 16-123, respondent's massage therapy license was revoked related to an arrest for prostitution in Scottsdale. According to court records, applicant's charges were dismissed in the interest of justice, but noted applicant forfeited her massage license and submitted an agreement to the court not to reapply for license for 5 years.
Thank you for that, Mr. Olson. At this time, I would like to give the applicant an opportunity to speak. Ms. Wen Ding, you are on the call. Would you care to comment on these previous violations?
She may be muted.
She is muted.
She is muted. Ms. Wen Ding, would you please unmute yourself?
Do you have a translator? English is my second language.
An interpreter?
Mm-hmm.
I don't believe we do have an interpreter for this meeting.
Okay, so what should I do now?
Madam Chair, we do not have an interpreter because the licensee indicated she spoke English.
Okay.
Okay, yeah. I was arrested for the 2015, April 8th. Yeah, after we went to the court, so I agreed to surrender my license. Yeah, I know, I understand, I made a little mistake, so I take the, I surrender my license. It's 4 or 5 years.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. This is Assistant Attorney General Seamus Monahan. Would the board like to entertain going into executive session to for legal advice to discuss this matter?
Yes, as a matter of fact, I would. I move that we go into executive session to obtain legal advice at this time. Do we have a second?
Yeah. So I confused.
Ms. Ding, not at this time. Oh. I apologize for interrupting you. You'll get the opportunity to speak as soon as we're done, okay?
Okay, sorry.
That's okay. All right, is there a second?
Board Member DeRusen, I'll second that motion.
Roll call vote, please, Mr. Augerton.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
Vice Chair Boone?
Aye.
Board Member DeRoost?
Aye.
Board Member Tapscott?
Aye.
And each of you have already received the link to the e-session, and Ms. DeRoost, you received a text. So if you would use that now, thank you.
Thank you. Do we have all of our anticipated board members back from the e-session? Okay. It is 11 minutes after 10, Monday, April 25th, and we are back in session from the executive session. I would like to open the floor to the board members to ask any questions at this time to Ms. Wending or to the investigator.
This is Board Member Tapscott. Ms. Ding, are you currently working as a massage therapist? Are you currently performing massage? I ask because you have a couple letters of recommendation that are recent that kind of imply maybe you are.
Yes, I was for massage
therapy. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, could you repeat that?
Yeah, so I was before and revoked my license. I was massage therapist, but now I did reflexology.
Okay, thank you.
I have a question for Mr. Elson. Mr. Elson, on the application for reinstatement, is it indicated on that application that English is a first language?
Give me just a second.
And Madam Chair, board members, this is Assistant Attorney General Seamus Monahan, and this is simply semantics, but I just wanted to make sure that I know it says in the agenda that it's reinstatement, but technically it's not. It's after that 5-year period. So she is just applying as a new applicant.
Okay. So initial application then.
It just says, is English your native language? She says no. And she says her native language is Mandarin Chinese. And in addition, she must take the English proficiency exam and request the agency submit the scores directly to the board, which she has not done.
Okay. Thank you for that.
This is Assistant Attorney General Seamus Monahan. I just want to clarify, we do not have her scores for the English proficiency examination.
Okay.
No. Not that I could find in her licensing packet.
Okay. We can ask Ms. Ding if she has taken that English proficiency exam. If not, we could also give her the opportunity to withdraw that initial application until she meets the qualifications, or we could deny it for failure to meet the qualifications.
Okay.
Ms. Ding, have you taken the English proficiency exam to fulfill the requirements of your Arizona massage therapy application?
Yes, I was at the school and it's a back to 2011. This time the school had a Chinese translator. That is the school have the two languages. One is English, one is the Chinese.
Ms. Ding, I'm having a very difficult time understanding what you're saying. It sounds like your microphone is cutting out.
Did you take the test from the English language? Yes or no?
Excuse me. Okay, so sorry. I can try to. Okay. I was at the school back to 2011. we have the Chinese translate. So that school have two languages. One is Chinese, one is English. So I take the 8 months to went to the school.
Okay, but have you taken an English proficiency exam to meet the requirements of this application that you are submitting to the board?
Yes, I did.
You have taken this exam, and have you submitted those results?
Yeah, I just a little bit confused. Okay, so the main when I went to school, I study is have a translator two language.
Madam Chair, this is Assistant Attorney General Seamus Monaghan. It appears at this time that either the English proficiency examination was not taken, or the documentation was not provided. It may be a good idea at this time to continue the matter to the next month to allow her to provide that information, and if not, then we can bring the application back for your review at that time if she has not taken the English proficiency exam.
Thank you for that, Mr. Monaghan. At this time, do any of the other board members have a motion that they would like to make at this time?
I would like to make a motion that we wait a month and allow her the opportunity to bring the English proficiency test if she has that. And then we can review.
I would like to second that motion. And can we do a roll call vote, Mr. Arverton?
Yes, Madam Chair. Board Member Tapscott?
Aye.
Board Member DeRoost?
Aye.
Chair Ryder?
Aye.
The motion passes 3 ayes, 1 absent.
Thank you. So the motion that passed is that we will move this particular case to next month and give Ms. Wen Ding an opportunity to take the English proficiency exam, submit the results to go in accordance with her initial licensing application. The board's decision will be reduced to a written order and served on the parties, and this concludes this matter.
Okay.
Our next case for review is Na Tu, massage license applicant. The purpose of this investigative review is to gather relevant information related to the previous violations. Can the board staff please summarize the file of case number 22180, Ms. Na Tu, applicant for massage therapy license?
Yes, Madam Chair. On December 8th, 2021, applicant applied for Arizona massage license. During the application process, it was discovered that on January 3rd, 2007, applicant was arrested and charged with misdemeanor prostitution in San Francisco, California. Goes on to show that according to the county and state of San Francisco, California, in said case number, on July 11th, 2007, the misdemeanor complaint was withdrawn and the case was discharged. Respondent, in her written statement, stated that she was arrested and charged, but at the club when the police raided it, she was only changing her clothes and was not engaged in any improper conduct with a client, and therefore the charges were dismissed.
Thank you for that. And do we have Ms. Na Tu on the virtual conference today? I would like to defer to the Attorney General's office on how to proceed with this. I do have questions. Obviously, I can't ask them.
We do not know if Ms. Na Tu is on today.
It doesn't look like she is.
I sent her an email when she inquired about the status of her license application. I sent her an email with a copy of the link for today's meeting and explained to her how to join. And I told her it was optional. She didn't have to attend if she didn't want to.
Which is true. So if the board wants to continue this to the next board meeting, or you can take into account what the investigator has told you and make a decision to grant or deny licensure today. It's up to you.
Is there a possibility to move it to an investigative hearing?
No. What you would do is just continue the matter to the next meeting, and then we would request that she show up to speak to you.
Okay. I move that we move this particular case to the next meeting and invite Ms. Na to the applicant for massage therapy license to join us at that meeting so that we can ask her more questions regarding her application.
Just to clarify, are we going to move this to the 23rd or the 17th?
The 23rd, please.
Okay. I'll make a motion to second that. I agree. I'd like to talk to her.
Thank you. And a roll call vote, please, Mr. Overton.
Yes, ma'am. Board Member DeRoost?
Aye.
Board Member Tapscott?
Aye.
Chair Ryder?
Aye.
Motion passes, 3 present and 1 absent.
So we will move this case to the meeting on May 25th, is it? And if we can just...
23rd, Madam Chair.
23rd, so we can make sure that Mr. Ms. Natu is informed to come to that meeting so that we can inquire. All right. Our next case is Diane Dodge, massage therapist impersonator. The purpose of this investigative review is to gather relevant information related to current violations. Do understand that our board only regulates licensed massage therapists. However, this particular case has been brought to our attention. Could board staff please summarize the file of case number 22-195, Diane Dodge impersonating a licensed massage therapist?
Yes, Madam Chair. On April 7th, 2022, I received an email complaint stating that Diane Dodge was engaging in massage therapy advertising on a website in Heber Overgaard, and even been witnessed calling herself a massage therapist and massaging clients. On April 13th, I initiated a phone call with the number listed on the website. Shortly after, approximately 10:15, she called me back and wanted to schedule a massage. At that time, I informed her I was actually not looking for a massage. I was the board's investigator, and asked her was she advertising a massage therapist. She said she was. I explained to her that her case would be going to the board as a massage therapist imposter. She provided me her address, and she was given instructions on how to get to the meeting.
And is Ms. Dodge in the meeting today that you are aware of?
No, I haven't seen her name.
Okay. Based on the information presented at this meeting and the finding of facts and statute rule violations identified in this investigative report, violations pursuant to ARS 32-4253, I move that the board issue a cease and desist letter.
Madam Chair, would you also like to amend that to include a criminal referral?
Criminal referral. Okay. A cease and desist letter and criminal referral. So I move that the board issue a cease and desist letter and criminal referral.
This is Board Member Tapscott. I second that motion.
And a roll call vote, please, Mr. Overton.
Yes, ma'am. Board Member DeRoost?
Aye.
Board Member Tapscott?
Aye.
Chair Ryder?
Aye.
3 ayes, 1 absent.
The motion passes. So, board staff, please issue a cease and desist letter and criminal referral. I would like to request another 5-minute comfort break before we move on to the next case.
I'll grant that request for you, Chair.
Thank you so much, Mr. Monahan. Thank you very much. We are back in session. It is 10:31 a.m. on Monday, April 25th. Our next case, the purpose of this investigative review is to gather relevant information related to the previous incarceration and determine if Ms. Christina Taracci, I hope I'm saying your name correctly, is eligible for a reciprocity license for massage therapy in Arizona. Could the board staff please summarize the file of case number 22-127, Ms. Christina Taracci, an applicant for massage therapy license?
Yes, Madam Chair. On September 13th, 2021, applicant applied for an Arizona massage therapy license by reciprocity based on an out-of-state license in Indiana. On her application, she disclosed she had been convicted of a class 1, 2, or 3 felony. Based on this information, the board conducted an investigation and discovered that, according to the Superior Court of Lake County, Indiana, on August 16, 2000, applicant pled guilty to voluntary manslaughter, a class A felony. The court considered several factors as aggravating circumstances as favor opposing consecutive terms of imprisonment. That the defendant had a history of criminal activity as follows. In 96, the defendant was convicted of auto theft, a class D felony. After killing the victim, the defendant, along with others, took steps to dispose of the victim's vehicle and other belongings in an effort to conceal the offense. There's evidence that the defendant did this act for monetary gain, which was realized. The victim of the crime was at least 65 years of age or older, namely 73 years of age. There are numerous letters to the court attesting to the deceased's good character, honesty, and devotion to his family and friends to whom his loss had a profound traumatic effect. The defendant was in a position of trust with the victim and used that position to accomplish the offense. The circumstances of the offense indicate that the defendant shot the victim in the back of the head from close range as he was leaving the room. There's also evidence that despite the fact the offense occurred after an argument, there was prior planning.
Thank you, Mr. Elson. At this time, I would like to give Ms. Taracci an opportunity to speak.
Good morning. It's Taracci,
thank you.
No problem. Good morning to the board. I'd like to thank you for giving me an audience at this time. I have an Indiana license, and I was the first recipient in Indiana with a violent felony to receive a license. I did go in front of the Indiana board. And what was the date? It was May 8th of 2017. I was issued an Indiana I think it was a certification at the time, but they have changed to licensing now. So I've moved to Arizona to be with family, and it has been over 5 years. I have the correct licensing. I took the MBLEX test, and I feel like I've qualified for an Arizona license. I just wanted to get approved. Going through the right steps. I'm trying.
Thank you very much. I'd like to open the questions to other board members for Ms. Taracci.
Good morning. So my question is, have no other legal, you're not going through any, you've paid your dues, I'm trying to think of the language.
Yes.
You're not going through any more court, everything is completed,
that
everything
is
done.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
You're good.
Okay. After I was released from prison, I was included in a 3-tier transitional program. After 14 years, I went to a one-year program where it was work release, then ankle monitor, and then weekly reporting. After I completed the program with honors, no parole, no probation. I haven't gotten so much as a parking ticket.
Congrats. That's amazing. That was my question. I was just wondering where you were at in that process, making sure that it was.
And Ms. Tarosi, this is Board Member Tapscott. I know you got a license in Indiana. Did you practice in Indiana?
Yes, I did.
Okay, for how many years?
For 4 years. I had two jobs.
Go ahead, sorry. No, please go ahead.
I was hired right out of school to be a massage therapist at a private gym where people would come in and work with their trainers. And then I was the massage therapist that worked with them. And then my second job was with Hand and Stone in northern Indianapolis.
And you received no complaints during that time?
No, none whatsoever. I
mean, besides somebody not liking their massage or something, but I just meant no serious complaints.
No.
Yeah, okay.
I had my employer from Hand and Stone send in a letter recommendation. I don't know if that arrived on time.
Yeah. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Olson, do you know if that letter of recommendation from Hand and Stone has been submitted or if we've received that?
I'm not showing one in our packet. I can recheck right quick for you.
That would be appreciated. Thank you. Mr. Roche, my question for you is, after your incarceration, what led you to want to pursue a career in massage therapy? And the reason I ask this is because of the circumstances of your incarceration. Massage therapy requires a very high level of trust in working with vulnerable clients or patients. So what led you to decide that that was a career that you wanted to pursue after your incarceration?
I definitely took that chance. I was instructed by the massage instructors at the college that I would have to go through a criminal background check upon applying for a license. I initially got out and realized that I was going to have to go into some sort of career, and I, outside of the medical field, prescribing medication and so on and so forth, I wanted to get into something that was going to benefit other people health-wise. I started out doing home health care, just volunteering with the people in the church, and that's when it was suggested to me that I try massage therapy. I kind of did that on my own without being trained formally for my home health care clients. So that's kind of where I got steered into that. But I was aware of the problematic part of it. So I kind of took that chance and hoped that what I've done after my crime would weigh out heavier than my past mistake.
Did your school that you attended for massage therapy indicate at all to you that there was a chance that you may not receive a license due to the previous incarceration?
Yes. As a matter of fact, my instructor did tell me that, and that just made me work even harder.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, I did a search of everything by her last name, and I haven't received a letter of recommendation at this time.
Thank you, Investigator Olson. Any other questions from Mr. Tapscott or Mr. Roost? I move that we go into executive session to obtain legal advice.
Do we have a second?
This is Board Member DeRoost. I'll second that.
And roll call vote, please.
Board Member Tapscott?
Aye.
Board Member DeRoost?
Aye.
Chair Ryder?
Aye.
Motion's approved.
Okay, we will go into executive session and return shortly. All right, it is 10:47 a.m. on Monday, April 25th, and we are back from executive session. Board members, I would like to invite you to openly discuss the case that is before us with any other questions for Ms. Tarocci.
Yes. Tap on it or...
This is Board Member Tapscott. I don't have any more questions. I just want to open this up for discussion. I recognize this is a challenging case due to the crimes that were committed and due to the vulnerable nature of massage therapy. However, what I think the board also needs to consider is that we participate, actually, by being on this board, in a criminal justice system and a system of laws. And I have great respect for that system. And when somebody enters that system and participates in it and is exited from that system properly, we believe that they are due a chance at a new life and to gainful employment. This is not an easy decision to make, again, because of the crimes in the past, but I do think redemption is part of that system. And I would be very inclined to issue this applicant a license with the understanding that we will never have any violations of any nature whatsoever and never see this applicant again. And I mean that in a good way. But that would be the way I would lean in this matter.
Thank you, Mr. Tapscott. Mr. Roos, do you have a comment or a question?
Yeah, I don't have any questions, but I think that was beautifully said, Board Member Tapscott. I think you said exactly how I was feeling, and that, you know, if somebody is going through this system and they're doing everything that they need to do, which it appears from what we can see that that's what's happening. You know, it was a very long time ago, and I certainly have hope that people can change and have redemption and need to be able to make a living, even especially if they have done everything that they need to do. I recognize that there is a level of trust going into this, and so I don't take that lightly, but I feel comfortable in issuing a license.
Thank you. I would like to echo Mr. Roos and Mr. Tapscott on all of these. When we received the board packet and reviewed this particular case, it weighed on me a lot, and primarily because of the relationship of trust in the previous violation and the amount of trust that has to go into working with massage therapy clients. Massage therapy clients, as I mentioned before, are in a vulnerable position. I also believe that time has been served. It appears, based on your presence here at this meeting, how you present yourself, your willingness to participate, and all of the qualifications that have been met in your license application, that I would also lean towards granting that application. That being said, would any of the board members like to create a motion at this time?
This is Board Member Tapscott. I'd like to motion that we approve this license application without restrictions.
Board Member Drews, can I second that motion?
And can we do a roll call vote, please?
Yes, Madam Chair. Board Member Moon. I'm sorry, Board Member Drews.
Aye.
Board Member Tapscott?
Aye.
Vice Chair Moon, you have resumed here at the meeting. Are you aware of the motion?
No, can I refuse myself from the motion?
I would just abstain.
Abstain.
Okay.
Chair Ryder?
Aye.
3 ayes, 1 abstention.
Okay, so the motion passes that Ms. Christina Tarocci can proceed with receiving her Arizona massage therapy license.
Thank you.
Thank you and congratulations.
Yes, congratulations. You. Good luck.
Thank you.
All right. Next on our agenda, Mr. Executive Director, do you have an update regarding HB 2438?
Yes and no, Madam Chair. The update is there is no update. So what I'm saying is that the bill remains in the Senate. It was approved in committee, as you recall, at our last meeting. It's been approved by the majority and minority caucuses, but the bill has not yet been put on the committee of the whole calendar in the Senate. And it's been that way since March the 28th. You have approved a letter of representing support for House Bill 2438 going to the full Senate. It was provided to the committee of reference, and we're holding off on transmitting the letter until we see that it's on the calendar. So that's the status of the bill. And I don't have any information to indicate one way or the other the likelihood of the bill proceeding or not proceeding, but would just offer that having the bill not proceed, nothing really should be read into that at this point. The legislature is focusing on the budget. So,
thank you for that. What I would like to do is just kind of keep this on future agendas so that it doesn't get lost. So if we could repeat that on the next agenda so it stays in the back of our minds so we can keep tabs on it, I would appreciate it.
Will do, Madam Chair. And if and when the bill does pass the full Senate, I just would remind the board it goes back to the House for final floor concurrence. And then it would be sent to the executive branch for review by the governor's office. And at that point, I would ask the board if we could use the same letter or a version thereof to advocate signing by the governor of the bill.
Wonderful. Thank you so much. Future items for the massage board agenda. As board members, any of you have anything that you would like to have added to future agendas? Mainly, we're looking at the Monday, May 23rd, 2022 agenda. Nothing? Well, I have all kinds of things. So, so item number one that I would like to add to our next meeting, I would like to discuss with the board members determining a fair date to reinstate in-person requirements for CEs. We currently have all of them online, which is great. But I think that kind of watching how the pandemic is going up and down, I think that it would be a great discussion to have. That can be changed, obviously, depending on how things pan out. But I think that we should maybe talk about having a date to instill the 12 hours online, 12 hours in person back again. That being said, I would also like to discuss the possibility of 3 of those continuing education hours to be mandatory ethics. I think we have to maybe have the Attorney General's office weigh in on that, if that is policy or if that's something that we can do. So I would like to have that on there as well. And I would like to see those 3 hours be for each renewal, and that would be consistent with what NCBTMB requires of their stakeholders. My third agenda item that I would like to discuss with the board members, and again, I would have to have the Attorney General's office probably weigh in on this or dig in and find some more information. I'd like to know what the board's policy is, if there is any, or if this is a different organization that we have to get information about. But information regarding working with minors in the treatment room, I want a clearer definition of what is required in our state, whether the Massage Therapy Board has any say-so as far as working with minors. In the treatment room with guardians and such. So those are my items that I would like to add to discussion on our meeting on May 23rd. Are you sure you don't have anything else? Okay. I feel like I talk a lot. Board staff, is there anything else from the board staff at this time?
No, Madam Chair, but I just want to remind everybody that you have committed to appearing at the meeting on the 17th, so we have a quorum. If anything should change on your calendars, could you advise prior to the 17th? Because we've got individuals scheduled to appear before you at that time. Thank you.
Thank you very much. So our next board meeting date is May 17th, 2022 at 9 a.m. And that is a special meeting followed by our regular board meeting date, Monday, May 23rd, 2022 at 9 a.m., both to be held digitally online. I have nothing further. So this meeting is now adjourned.